Hi there, Beer Garden. How's your luck reunion going? Good. Hey, my name is Chris Shiflett. Hey, I got a podcast called Walking the Floor that I've been doing for a few years. And the nice people here at Luck were willing to let us come out here to the Beer Garden and do this. And I have a very special guest that I'd like to welcome to the stage right now. You know him, you love him, Mr. Shaky Graves. Come on.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, senors and senoritas. This is Chris Shiflett, and you are listening to another fine, fine edition of Walking the Floor. This is my special South by Southwest post-trip to Austin wrap-up. Gonna do a little review of everything we did that week, and it was a glorious week. It was a busy, action-packed week. But before I get to that, don't know if you listened to my little announcement the other day, but we announced the release date of my new record, Hard Lessons. It's coming out June 14th, pretty much everywhere except for the UK. It's coming out June 21st. You can pre-order it now if you go to my website. There's a web store up now that you can pre-order it there. You can go to iTunes Store. You can go to Amazon. You can stream two songs. We put up another song, so it's the second track from my record that we put up in all the streaming services, and I think you get those as like an instant grat track if you pre-order the album now. So go out there and get it, and even if you don't, go to wherever you stream music and listen to the second single we've just put out. It's called Welcome to Your First Heartache, following hot on the heels of the first one we put out, which was This Old World. So that's out there to check out ahead of my trip over to Dublin and the UK and Scandinavia here in a few days, kicking off that tour. I think there's still a few tickets left for Bristol. There's still some tickets left in Glasgow and Edinburgh. And there are still tickets left in Oslo, Copenhagen, and Stockholm. That's it. Yeah, go to my website. All the ticket links are there. Boom, you get your tickets today. Get your pre-order today. Listen to, my new single, Welcome to Your First Heartache. You can go to my web store. You can buy a bundle. You can get a vinyl and a bandana and a t-shirt and a sticker and fucking all kinds of shit, man. It's all up there. We're doing commerce, people. Let's do it together. Okay, goddamn, what a week. I basically got home Sunday from South by Southwest a couple Sundays ago now, and went to bed. I had a good sleep because we had a crazy week. I jumped right into it down there, flew down on Tuesday to Austin, went right to a rehearsal with Ray Benson and Asleep at the Wheel because I played a couple songs with him at his birthday party that night. Then I bopped over to do an acoustic gig on the radio that's probably out there in the internet somewhere. That was fun. And then went back and did the Ray Benson gig that was super duper fun. Crazy. Got up there, my pedal board didn't work. You know, just one of those like throw and go situations where I was just like, I've tried to plug into this amp, that didn't work. Plugged into this other amp, okay, boom, let's let it rip. And then the next day, my band got in, had nothing much going on that day, but then we did Luck Reunion, which I've never been out to, and it was super fun. We were there all day. That's where I did today's interview that you're about to hear in a minute with Mr. Shaky Graves. So we hung out there, played over on the saloon stage. It was nuts. Next day, we did two gigs at the Yeti Showcase over at their flagship store. That was great. I did a little acoustic thing over there, too, that's lived somewhere on the internet on Yeti's socials. And then played their gig and then went over and played what might be my favorite gig of this whole campaign thus far. We played what was pretty much like a keg party at Arlen Studios. It was nuts. It felt like 1987 to me. It felt like my high school band playing a keg party out in Cito on a weekend. It was nuts. There were just people right in your grill and you're pushing your gear through a drunk frat dudes and girls all over. It was just the whole thing. I loved it. Loved every minute. It was a sweaty, hot mess, and it was fantastic. Then the next day, we closed it out at Paul Cawthon's Big Velvet Review, which was a great way to end things. That was nuts, too. Just packed out, and I think during our set, the fire marshal came and was yelling at Jeremy, my manager, to remove the tarp and the this and the that, and I didn't know what was happening, but it was great. And then we flew home the next day, and that was that. Another South by Southwest in the books. Bam! All right, let's get to our sponsors. You know Zounds.com. All you struggling musicians out there that want to go get a good deal on the internet for some strings or a guitar, an amp, a microphone, whatever you need. Every order $599 and above is eligible for Zounds.com's exclusive 12-part payment plan, man. So get over there, Zounds.com. And while you're at it, get yourself some D'Addario strings, because support for Walking the Floor comes from D'Addario. D'Addario, a fine maker of USA-made instrument strings and musical accessories, is committed to sustainability through the Playback Program, recycling over 1 million used instrument strings. For more information on the Playback Program and how to help in its mission of reaching 2.5 million strings in 2019, visit playback.d'addario.com. Now let's get on over to today's interview. Alright, so you know, I have not done many of these podcast interviews live in front of an audience. As a matter of fact, prior to doing this one with Shaky Graves, I had only ever done it once when I interviewed Dickie from the Boss Tones, and that was years ago. So it's not something I'm used to. However, it is something I want to do more and more of because it's really fun. It just changes the whole interview thing. You're like, you know, kind of very aware that you're in front of people instead of sitting quietly in a room somewhere. But I tell you, Shaky Graves could not have been a better guest to do this with, because he plays really nice with the interview ball. I'd never met him before until, you know, about 2 minutes before we went on stage to do this, and he was great. What a good guy, good hang, and it was really generous of him to come over and do this, because, you know, he was playing a gig later that day, and I'm sure had 8,000 things to do and get his vibes together before his set and all that stuff. So thank you, Mr. Shaky Graves, for coming and doing this with me, and thank you to the Luck Reunion folks for helping put this together, and a big thank you to everybody that was there and hung with us in the hot sun over at the Beer Garden stage for this here interview that you're going to hear right now. This is Shaky Graves on Walking the Floor. Yes, sir. You'll notice I conveniently positioned myself in the shade of these lights.
Oh, you monster.
But you get all that beautiful sun.
Well, we both have hats, so
that's true. You were out-hatting me pretty hard when you got here earlier, so I had to go to my van and get my hat.
Yes.
Got How's it going, buddy?
It's going great. Oh, hold on. Let me get this mic out of this thing.
Okay.
I want to be freewheeling like you, man.
Yes. You can't hold this man back.
Ah.
There we go.
Yeah, there
Cheers.
It is.
Cheers. Better.
Cheers.
Hey, it's a pro gig. I put some water over there for you.
Wow. Stage towels.
How is your... How's your Luck Reunion going?
It's good.
Have you done this before?
I have. I've done this. I've played it once. I played in that church right there years ago, and it was like one of my favorite shows I think I've ever done. It was kind of...
Really?
Yeah, it was like at a time in my life where things kind of got a little bit bigger afterwards, and it was a hometown thing, and it's like out here at Willie's Spot, and all my family and friends were there, and it's in a tiny church, and I set up, and like... It was like the end of a movie. We're like, and all your friends are there.
Cheering
like,
you on. Victory.
And like everyone like, you know, danced.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
People were like, he's doing it.
You live in Austin?
I do. I live in Austin.
Are you from Austin?
I'm born and raised in Austin.
Okay, yeah. Wow. An actual local.
Whew!
That was cheap applause right there. Cheap applause.
We're pandering. I will take it.
I mean, how is this week for you with like the whole entertainment industry descending upon your hometown? Are you like, get the fuck off my lawn, tourist?
Yeah, a little bit. You say that, and then you're like, you know, I heard my friend's doing something over at this thing. And then you're like, getting out of an Uber at 5:30 in the morning, like, God, get me every time.
Well, you're a young buck. You can handle it.
Yeah, you know.
Us old timers, I'm like, I was burnt after about 20 minutes.
Well, it's intense. I mean, I put in some time, and now I kind of feel lucky where I leave town and come to things like this. I guess this still counts. I mean, it's like it's not like we're really avoiding it, but we are. We've succeeded. Good job, everybody. Good job,
guys. Nice work. Give yourselves a round of applause.
Cheap applause as well. Good job.
Okay, I read a good quote of yours the other day that I wanted to read back to you.
Okay.
I detest busking, and I always did.
Truth.
Okay, let's talk about busking.
Okay.
Here we go. I'm a little bit obsessed with busking. I have actually bussed once in my life. I did not come up busking.
Doesn't sound very obsessed with it, I'd say.
Well, I'm obsessed with other people doing it. I'm like I'm a busker from afar. I wanna be a busker.
Well, let me specify by saying I don't detest buskers.
Okay, good.
I detest busking.
Right, but is that how you kind of came up? Is that how you started? I know when you first started, you were like a one man band kind of thing. Solo acoustic.
Yeah, but I always kind of thought it was important to even like to just kind of play a show, even if people aren't listening, as opposed to, you know, the thing about busking is that you kind of have to, it's like a quick grab and sort of can be a cheap entertainment moment. And then, you know, maybe like, I think my favorite busking is when people are like have crazy breakdance routines or, you know, some things really are lend themselves to that, like street performance.
But did you do a lot of busking yourself?
I was in...
Because weren't you the official busker of the Railroad Revival Tour?
That's true. But that was all a myth and a hoax, sort of.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, there is no such thing as an official busker.
I'm never going to check Wikipedia for my interview content ever again.
Official busker is like, you know... That's not a thing. Like it's like you're the official person that we don't pay attention to. Like you're a beggar. You're our official beggar.
Well, you see, this, you're getting at something that this is the thing that I'm kind of fascinated about with busking. Because the one time I did it, I was in Nashville. We had a day off on tour, and I'd always wanted to go busking. So I went and I bought a little acoustic guitar, and I went down to Broadway.
Did you make any money?
I did. Okay, that was my first busking tip that somebody told me, was that you got to stock your case a little bit. But the thing that I quickly figured out with my own busking moment was that when you're busking, nobody will make eye contact with you.
No.
Because if they make eye contact with you, that then they feel compelled to like throw a dollar in your case. So as the night went on, I would find myself getting a little more aggressive in my bus. I'd kind of get out in front of people and try to get in people's face. And it kind of worked.
See, that's like the real like forcing my wares upon people just hurts my soul a lot. Like, yo, man, look at this.
Isn't that what we do all the time?
That's fair. But, you know, like, I guess my preferred method is being ignored at a bar while you play.
That's my teenage dating technique. I just want to point
being
that
ignored,
out.
Being ignored,
Just standing against the wall and hoping someone will talk to me.
I look pretty cool. You should have put a hat out with money in it and then, you know, maybe it would have worked a little more. But, like, you know, I think I kind of... I still use a lot of, I guess, busking guerrilla tactics. it's not a thing. But would, you know, like, if you play in bars and stuff when you're coming up, I had to find ways to get louder than the actual bar itself.
It's hard.
And find ways to make people pay attention to me. But at the same time, I still felt like I could actually just have songs. And, like, if I started a song, someone would listen to maybe the whole thing or three.
Right.
And I wasn't like, hey, I know you want to go to Urban Outfitters, but you can just hang out with me for 2 minutes and give me some money and then leave.
It's,
you know?
It's funny, you know, I just did a bunch of solo acoustic tour dates.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of not the dynamic at all that I came up playing music in.
No.
And so it was just kind of learning on the fly. And I love it. It's super fun.
Yeah.
But it felt to me like... at a really good show, I would have the crowd, it'd all be working, and then somewhere around the 45-minute mark, I could feel the room kind of go, like, I would just felt like I would lose them. Like something about that dynamic, at least the way that I do it, would sort of wear out after a little while. Did you ever have similar experience?
Well, I mean, the reason that I play, you know, I do like a one-man band thing, but all my music started as like me recording myself.
Right.
So just coming up with stuff that I could never even like replicate, and I would give CDs to people, and then I would play it by myself on a guitar, and they're like, that doesn't sound like that. And I'm like, I know. And then, you know, trying to get shows, I lived in LA at the time, and a buddy of mine ran this like speakeasy thing downtown off of Santa Fe Street that was called 2023. And it had like parties, like maybe five nights a week, and it was kind of invite only. But you know, it was like donations. Had an illegal bar in it, and I helped run the place and like slept under a pool table And I would get to kind of open these shows. And some nights it was like really chill listening room thing where I could get away with stuff like that. And then another night I had to play after one of the guys from Hot Hot Heat. He was like, "Hey, I got a side project."
Chuck Reagan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was like, can I like...
His solo thing is not mellow.
No, yeah, full band. And oh, so okay. It kicked off. People started dancing. And then it was like, "And now it's your turn." And I was like, "Oh my God, what am I going to do?" And I had seen some one-man bands before. I saw the first show that I saw that was like all one-man bands was called the Blue Billy Hillgrass Tour, which was Bob Log the Third, Scott Byram, and Possessed by Paul James. And so it was three one-man bands in a row, and they all did it like entirely differently, which shocked me. And I was at that point where I hadn't found a drummer, or like I was kind of really, my music was still developing, so like when I would play with people and they would just lean into it, it didn't feel right. I couldn't find what I needed. And I didn't know enough people and I wasn't making money anyway, so I felt guilty like trying to share the not wealth, you know? And so that was a quick fix. Like I saw it and was like, oh, my feet can be drummers. And then one thing that especially this guy Possessed by Paul James does, he had a suitcase that he would just open and get like the female end of a pipe railing. You know, that you like screw a pipe, you know, like make a pipe rail. And he would just drop a microphone in it so it would hold it. And he would just smash on the other side of the suitcase. And then he would play fiddle and guitar. And when the crowd would start to, he was the opener. So when the crowd would start to kind of like, me included, you know, I'm hanging out with people. And we'd start to talk. He would just transform the song into something else. It was like, even if it was a song, he would let it slow down, or he would break it down, or suddenly speed it up, and kind
that
of
that is the beauty,
yeah,
of doing it just one man show. Mm-hmm. You can sort of stop on a dime, if somebody heckles you, you can stop and answer, or what,
throw
do
an egg at them, yeah,
right, exactly, whatever. Yeah, that is the thing that I love about it.
Yeah, and so that sort of freedom, like that matched up with my mindset about music in general, is that I do kind of like. I mean, I'm not like, I don't consider myself a deeply technical person in the first place, so I'm kind of always just on the edge of falling
winging
off a
it.
Cliff, you know. Right. And I like doing that. There's sort of a personal fright, you know, like going in unprepared and hoping that something magical happens, which backfires all the time. But when it works, you're like, yeah, everybody. They're like,
that's the magic.
Yeah.
I mean, do you bring some of that? Like, you tour with a band now, right?
I do. Yeah.
And do you bring some of that into the full band?
Yeah, much to their chagrin at times, I do, yes.
What for you, like, what's the advantage of playing with a full band as opposed to solo? Like,
oh, literally, like, three other people, you know?
I mean, it gets lonely playing solo, I think.
Well, it's
because I've been bouncing back between full band and solo, and as soon as my band goes home, I was like, fuck, there's no one to...
I mean,
talk shit in the van with anymore.
Right. Yeah, well, there's the loneliness factor. Be the kind of like, I'm going insane, or don't have anyone, like if something goes bad, you go backstage like, hey, no one, that was crazy, no one.
Plus you can blame it on your band.
Yeah, oh, classic.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just give them the old stink eye.
But I mean, there's so much like, you know, it's kind of using two different parts of the brain a little bit, where I've recently done a couple more, like I played solo for a whole set last night, and then, for a while, it was me solo, and then it was just me and a drummer, and we came up with a way to fill up a lot of sound.
Right.
And that was even different than me just going solo. Like, there's a certain richness where then you have to match an actual drum kit that I would forget I had all these techniques, like gear, where I would loop a guitar amp into a bass amp to make sure there was low end. I had a micro Korg that I would have a looping pedal on so I could do really simple bass lines and then sometimes go over it, just to try and give peaks and valleys to... Like you were talking about, like at that 45-minute mark, we're like,
because his eyes are starting to glaze yeah. over.
I played a show in Toronto opening for Alejandro Escovedo, and this was like, I was feeling like the one man band thing was working a lot, and at that point I had gotten a little comfortable with it, and so every song was just four on the floor, and I kind of didn't even think about it, and I read a review the next day in a Toronto the Moose or whatever, and it was like, sorry,
those damn Canadians.
I know that's a low Canadian joke, but it was like, you know, Shaky Graves kicks this off, and like the first three songs, it was like so engaging and fun to watch, and then it was like I think I had a full hour, And it was like by the 30-minute mark, you know, I was just waiting for this to him to stop yelling at me. And I was like, oh, fuck.
Fuck.
And it's also just kind of like, you know, you panic
Don't
on stage.
Read
you
your own reviews, man. Come
well,
on.
But it was helpful. It's like I did need to hear that. And sometimes you do need to hear stuff like that. Sure. Because I also don't want to do that to
right.
people.
Right.
My goal isn't to go up and just like bash your head against the wall.
Sure.
And I have other stuff that I would just be kind of nervous to do. Like maybe I'm like, well, that sensitive waltz, you know, somebody doesn't want to hear that in this room. And the truth is like, if you bring people somewhere, that they'll go with you. People want to give you the benefit of the doubt. They don't want you to die on stage.
It's
sometimes.
Really, it's really, really easy to misread a crowd. And I always have to remind myself that, you know, like, people paid their $10 or whatever, and they're here, right. and they want to have fun, and they don't want you to suck. They're like rooting for you.
You see know? Someone like
they're not
like,
against
yeah.
you.
You see someone lean over, and you're like in your brain.
What's he laughing
like,
at me for?
This dude's awful. He's just like, I'm having such a great time with my family. And you're just like, fuck you, guy. You know, it's, like, it's horrible.
I mean, do you write differently for your when it's just you solo as opposed to like when you're writing for like your latest record is more fleshed out. Sonically, is it a different process for you? Or is it the same thing?
Yeah, it is. It is in the sense that like I've really because I've done stuff by myself for a long time, kind of out of necessity, and then sometimes out of preference. But the goal was always to have other people because I can only teach myself so much. You know, you really learn a lot from even just how to play, where you have to leave space for other people. You know, less is often more. I was used to having to play bass notes and, you know, and like cover everything. And then as soon as a bass player entered it, I was just ruining all the low end of my own stuff.
Yeah.
And it would just turn into mud. And so the last record, I actually, like, I wanted to write with my band, who is like, I finally do have a band that these are like my friends and musical collaborators. And so it was a different process in the sense that I approached it like that on purpose. I was like, let's write songs.
Well, like, you as know? You sort of continue to evolve as an artist or musician, do you get some of the, like, your hardcore early fans that want you to be the same guy that they discovered?
Constantly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, constantly. Especially like, we didn't go to Europe, or I didn't go to Europe a lot in, like, formative times.
Those are the people I always say they love you so much, they hate you.
And like, so now when I go over there, it's now full band where they're like, where is the guy who has luggage and comes?
Where's the suitcase guy?
Yells it. And at like, you know, I've had some people in Amsterdam just like mid show, like, ditch the band. And you're like, come on, buddy. Like, help me out here.
That's where band volume comes into play. That's the shit that you couldn't do when you were just solo acoustic.
And the aforementioned eggs, where you just egg
a
fool. Yeah.
And that's actually the guy in the crowd having the best time too.
Yeah. It's such a weird compliment. Like, I love you so much, but only the stuff that I love you doing. And you're like,
I don't want you to ever change.
Thank you.
So I saw you have a ton of tour dates coming up.
I've got some.
Are you like in cycle? When did your last record came out last year? But
it did.
How deep into that are you?
I mean, I guess it's tough for me to entirely subscribe to just album cycles, especially since I still feel like I'm expanding on what this show is and what the project is and who I am. So I always kind of try and have the, because I'm also one of those people that when I go see a show, I sort of want you to play the hits and your new stuff. I want whoever it is to be happy.
Right.
But I'm like, I also kind of hope you play, you know, Private Dancer, right? Like, come on, play your, do the thing for me.
Right.
And so.
And don't do the jazz version of it. I want the regular single
just
version.
Give it to me. Yeah. And so I flip-flop between that, too. I love having people have dynamic, wild versions of their own songs. And then sometimes I just like to sing along, you know? So I try and toe that line purposefully in what I do, just for myself and because I try and consider the listener to like, jostle them around as much as possible and also be like, we're on the same team here, hopefully,
right.
You know?
Well, let's going back a little bit, what do you think, like, how'd you catch the music bug? Was it environment? Was it your family? Was it your friends? What was it? What got you into this whole thing?
Well, I grew up doing theater. My family are all like Austin theater playwright. My dad's a set and light designer. And so I grew up doing like, you know, regional theater stuff, high school theater. I was great in high school theater.
Was the music and the acting side by side?
Well, theater always has a like foray into musical theater at some point, especially if you're a kid, where it's like, let's do show tunes. And so I sang, you know, but I was also sort of stubborn and like didn't consider myself musical at all and just sort of like told myself that up until I was maybe 13. I was in seventh grade. And I got my first girlfriend, who was an eighth grader, which was like coming up in the world. And she had like a bra and stuff. It was crazy. I know, it was crazy. And
that's what was going on in theater class. I had no idea.
This was like where I was like, no, I never sang and danced. Like, I'm really into corn. I like stuff. Whatever you like, I like. You know, it's like seventh grade. It's tough time.
What would your like sort of key influences be then?
Oh, God, at that point? Oh, darkness. I was coming out of, like, an unabashed love of pop music and then entered the realm of seventh grade where it was like, no, dude, we hate everything. And I was like, oh, right. I got you. So I got a bunch of, like, I had, like, an Insane Clown Posse CD.
I hear that in your music.
But, yeah. So, it's a lot of Insane Clown Posse, some Stained, I guess, probably. Power Man 5000, you know, the classics.
I would never have pegged you for that guy.
No, I wasn't that guy, but that was like the environment. I mean,
I say that as somebody, I'm quite a bit older than you, and I grew up listening to Scorpions and Judas Priest and all the, you know, the stuff that predated that, but appealed to the same kind of kid.
It's arguably still better music, no matter what. I would have to say. But, you know, the Hatchet Clan, the those crazy clowns do the all sorts of cool stuff. Juggalo world is power to them.
So then when did you start playing out and sort of doing your own? Did you used to have like early band, teenage band experiences and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, said girlfriend went to Mexico over the summer and cheated on me. And I found out through best friend on AOL Instant Messenger, like, oh my God, and like this whole thing. And so I had this plan because she was really into guitar players where over the summer I was going to master guitar. And just shred face. And
so she cheated on you, but you were determined to win her back.
Yeah, or to just like make her feel real weird about it. Like, oh, I didn't know that you were like, and so I started like,
I didn't know you were a genius. I would have never done that.
You never told me you were great at guitar. And I was like, oh, I just learned when you ruined my baby life, you know? So she came back. It didn't matter. She was like, I don't care. And I was like, I guess I don't either. But that void that I had for that first, like, you know, first heartbreak is confusing and wild where you're like, who am I? You know, and that merged with me getting over the hump of the painful beginning of playing guitar,
right,
where practicing can feel, you know, practicing feels like a task. It was like I was determined to get somewhere. And then the first time I did like a C to an A minor on my own and was able to sort of change the happy to the sad musically. Right. And it was like, finding masturbating, you know, I was like, whoa, I don't even have to listen to music. I can just like, C, A minor, C, A minor.
I get it. I had the same experience. And so, I never stopped masturbating, but I know what you mean.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
But so then that kind of just became, you know, music was always, I was in like a bad screamo band in high school, played guitar. But that, you know, our band was tough. we had just really bad shows all the time. We'd play like DIY spaces and stuff. But I got to see all these. I was part of like, got sucked into that scene, which is like, you know, hand screen printing everything. And you would see these like insane thrash bands and sludgecore and post-90s emo bands. All this stuff where I was like,
super DIY.
Yeah, just wild stuff. Like crazy straight edge shows and coffee shops where you're like, how do they allow us to do, you know, just like house parties. And anyway, that whole world taught me a lot about like the community of that was maybe the most tight and like seemingly violent thing that was actually all about like people pounding Dr. Pepper and like being friends about it. It was so weird. And I was like, this is great, you know, and like go to a thrift store and buy a bunch of shirts and turn them inside out and screen print on other people's shirts and then sell them and like, you know, make so Dr. Pepper money, and you're like, what?
So
what's going on?
When did that evolve into solo acoustic?
Well, so
stuff?
That just turned
and in, musically, what took you there?
That just turned into me recording. So I always drew too when I was a kid. I was always constantly drawing, and so I was always able to conceptualize an artistic project as building something. So like the first time I got like a multi-track recorder was when it really started for me, where I would sort of write songs, but I didn't really write songs in, because I wasn't comfortable singing and playing at the same time. So multi-tracking, I was able to like put down a guitar part that I could barely get off, and then sit around with a microphone in my room and then like make up stuff around it. And then I got into like harmonizing with myself, and then like that just became the world to me, you know? And so I just continued doing that more so than playing out, but always like recording, which is still something that is like closer in my heart maybe even than performance, is that I love starting the day with absolutely no song existing, and then hearing something the tape's accidentally slow, you speed it up, you match the drums, slow it back down, and then you have this thing that didn't exist, you know, 12 hours before, is like, I highly recommend people doing that in all aspects of life. It's just building.
Agreed. That is stuff. The magic.
Yeah.
On that end, would you like to play us a song now?
Sure.
Awesome. Did you bring your suitcase?
No.
Damn.
You didn't tell me, man.
Well, I thought we'd have some suitcase lessons.
Suitcase? I saw a guy now that suitcase, my friend Will built that, and that design was like entirely his. And I saw a dude busking in South By with a totally nicer version of the same. It's like people manufacture those now. They're starting like, hey, cool, my buddy makes those. I'm like, my buddy makes those.
I hope you get a royalty off that. Mr. Shaky Graves, come on. Stick around here. He's going to play us a tune, and I'm going to get out of the way.
What?
If you want to intro it with a little story or anything, that's always good for podcasting.
Okay. So here's a, this is a song called Dining Alone that's, no, I don't want to do Dining Alone, forget that. I'll go way back in the archive. So this is a foray into me multi-tracking a song when I was 17. And decided to write a love song and didn't really know that much about love at all, and thought it would be cool to have like a fictional song about somebody who loves another person but like just doesn't show up for them. And I was like, that would be crazy if people really did that in the world. It's totally insane. And then I forgot about it and grew up a little bit more, and then had gone through that experience myself and done that to other people and was like, oh, you wrote this about yourself. And so then I went back and kind of amended the second verse and realized that what the song's actually about isn't not showing up for somebody, but it's actually just about being afraid of what happens next in love and in life, which still to this day is something that we all fight with from time to time. So this is a song called Tomorrow. I'm tired of losing. I used to win every night of the week. Yeah, back when sex and amphetamines were the staples of our childhood physique. You used to tell me we'd turn into something. You said life was much better than this. But the closest I come to perfection's when you turn around to steal a kiss. Oh. Yeah, but you never trusted tomorrow. Is that any way to live your life? You love this heart and this six-string girl, but they've been out of tune, yeah, for some time. So that's 17-year-old me verse. Name-dropping amphetamines, not knowing what they were. Talking about sex, like, yeah, sex. And here comes, like, 22-year-old me, real smart. Little cocky.
Well, you say you love so many women.
That's not true.
But only so many women love driving me wild. Yeah, 'cause I get lost in complexion and the structure of a well-placed smile. But baby, you, oh, you never smile. And sometimes it looks a lot better that way. Yeah, a lot better that way. Oh, but you never trusted tomorrow. Oh, that's just a problem of mine. 'Cause I've been thrown around by some bad ones, girl, and a good one was a new thing this time. Oh, but you showed me that I couldn't be farther from the truth of the problem at hand. I could never say, baby, tomorrow I'll be right there, I swear. Oh, I'll be your man. Yeah, I'll try as best as I can.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Chris. Oh, shit.
Oh, thank you. Luck Reunion, give a big warm round of applause for Mr. Shaky Graves. That was amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers, brother.
I'm Chris Shiflett. This has been Walking the Floor. We'll post this thing soon. Thank you.
Mr. Shaky Graves on Walking the Floor doing a bitchin' acoustic tune there at the end. What a great dude. Make sure you get over to walkingthefloor.com. I'm going to post some links so you can check out his tour dates, buy his t-shirts, stream his music, blah, blah, blah. Check out whatever he's up to. And don't forget, get on over and pre-order my new album, Hard Lessons, out June 14th. June 21st in the UK. You can pre-order it now. You get two brand new songs when you do that. And get over to my website, chrisshiflettmusic.com, and pre-order that stuff and buy yourself a t-shirt and a sticker and a hat. It's going to be awesome. All right, and I'll see all you out in Dublin, out in the UK, out in Scandinavia, on tour with my band in just a few days. So get your tickets at chrisshiflettmusic.com. Gonna be a hoot and a holler. That's it for me today. Adios, amigos.